time like something like this happens, it makes me feel like it makes me feel a little bit like Joe Rogan. Like I want to be on this podcast and talk like Joe Rogan. Like,
you don't even, if you were in the jungle, you'd be fucking monkey meat, man. Do you understand how big a polar bear is? I just want to say shit like that because we would all get killed in the fucking wild. It's what it feels like.
Oh, hell yeah.
It feels like we all just get murdered in the wild because we can't tell the difference between a real doctor and a fake doctor.
And a fake doctor. No, no way. But we can't tell the difference. I don't know.
We can't even tell the difference between, like obvious conspiracy shit and not conspiracy. We can't tell the difference anything.
Ugh.
I don't want to get you off because I know this is your bailiwick right now. Yeah, I learned that word.
Yeah, man.
I understand this is your bailiwick, so I'm gonna keep it moving. I'm gonna give the people what they came here for,
which is
Mao, part 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not gonna cover everything. I'm sorry.
We never do. We never cover.
I'm not
going to
actually cover.
That's just how it goes.
And again, this is the Joshua Stokes Day version of history and the hard-fought history version of history. There's some things I believe more than others. There are other things I don't believe at all. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, but we're going to give
that
you
get sick by having sex with demons.
Yeah, like, that is a real.
That bullshit. I don't believe
I
that
think,
at all.
That theory may hold up a little bit more than we think it does.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. I don't have a lab coat. I can't properly assess the situation.
How are you speaking when you have a lab coat, sir? Five finger hand point at him. No, so, all right. So we're going to get part 3 of Mao, 1949 to 1976. Okay, you ready, Henry?
I'm ready.
Okay. So when we last left off, our hero, okay, this time he's really not our hero.
He's really not.
really not.
No.
This time, okay. You ever like listen to like Glenn Beck or like some like wild conservative nigga, and he's always like, there are Maoist protesters on the street. They'll say that a lot now. They're like, they're Maoist
Marxists,
communist,
the Marxist Black Lives Matter movement. And it's like, where are you equating the two from? Where are you getting that from?
This is so they watched a documentary about the part we're about to talk about, and then they're miscorrected. They're not correctly applying what they learned in that documentary.
Explore the nuances, man. Yeah, it's all in the nuance. You know what I mean? All right.
So in October 1st, 1949, Communist China came to power, and after that, that was time for them to rule. They've spent 22 years from 27 to 1949 waged in a communist revolutionary struggle, and they finally did it. And now it's their chance to fucking rule. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's their third chance to rule.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So this time should be perfect. I'm not going to say that.
Yeah, I mean, third time's the charm, right? You had your dry runs, and now here we go with the real deal. You own most of China, or you're on top, undisputed leader of most of China.
Yeah.
What are you going to do now that you're on top?
One of the first things we're going to do, we're going to invade Tibet. Why?
Fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why? Because fuck Tibetan monks.
Because fuck them. Too peaceful. Spineless, all right? Fuck them.
That's how we feel. One of the first things, because they invaded Tibet because China and the Kuomintang before the communists China seized Tibet as part of like the Chinese homeland, and also the communists wanted to free the Tibetans of what they saw as a feudalistic oppressive government. You like the Dalai Lama? The Dalai Lama, don't you? You know he was feudalist. You know, it's according to Mao.
He was exploiting you, you fucking lumping fucks.
You guys are lumping proletariat.
That's applied vocab right there.
We learned that in the last episode, so you know what the fuck we're talking about. You haven't watched the last episode. You didn't listen, okay? So if you want to get into Tibet, that's a whole thing. They take Tibet. We got a lot more stuff to get to. It's a whole thing. Still, they're still running Tibet to this day. It doesn't seem pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
So next, China gets involved in the Korean War in October of 1950.
Because when you're hot, you're hot, man. Yeah. When you're hot, you're hot. You come on top and you're like, no, we need to press every advantage we can. We need to fucking hit on 16. Mm-hmm. All right? Hit on 16. We're fucking hot right now. We're rolling. We're doing it.
That's what I'm saying, man. He said the People's Volunteer Army, Special Unit of the People's Liberation Army, into the Korean War, and to fight as reinforcements for the North Korean Korean People's Army, which had been in like full retreat. Yep. And Korean War, very interesting. whole thing. Fucking how like the Marines were like almost at the Chinese border, and then they had to fucking this dash backwards because the Chinese did this like wave assault of, and this, and like Mao is like responsible for a lot of the like actual like the actual like tactics used in the Korean War, and which is overstated because it was very fast mobile war. But a lot of it was just human wave tactics.
Yeah, just war of attrition. We've got fucking hundreds of thousands of people that we can just throw at this war.
Yeah, 180,000 Chinese troops died during the Korean War. Okay. And fuck, it's a lot of people. And you think that's a lot of people. Yeah, you're wondering, why would you laugh at 180,000 people dying in a war? And I'm like, oh, because it's more coming, baby. Mm-hmm. It's more. Mm-hmm. So
drop in the bucket.
180,000 Chinese troops dead in the Korean War. One of them being Mao's own son, Mao An-ying, which is Mao's eldest son, was killed in an airstrike in 1950. I think it was November of 1950. And Mao, again, maybe great philosopher, maybe great kind of war tactician, maybe great revolutionary thought, maybe great communist, but a shit person. a shit person did not tell his son's widow that his son had died. He died in 1950. Didn't tell her until the summer of 1953.
Damn, man. I mean, I never want to defend Mao, but there are just some conversations you do not want to have.
That is the most narcissist bullshit I've ever heard in my life. You just got to have them.
That's one of them, you know?
You got to have that conversation. Look, hey, I know you kind of, because you keep saying, hey, I can't wait till Mao Wen-Ying gets back. And I'm just always like, oh, she doesn't know. Everybody else knows.
You just got to be like, oh, me too. Yeah. We're going to go to the zoo. We're going to go on our carnival cruise. It's going to be a great time. Yeah. We're going to have a bunch of quality family bonding time once Mao Wen-ying gets back. Oh, wait.
No, he died. He died in Korea.
He's never going to see those elephants, man.
He's never going to... Elephants?
At the zoo.
I ain't been to a zoo in a long time, dog. I just think... When I say the zoo, I just mean the streets. Okay, I need to stop. I need to stop. That's awful. All right. So get past the Korean War. Well, on the home front, on the domestic side, you're going to have in 1950 and 1952, you're going to have the Chinese land reform movement. And I think in the last podcast, I said something about land reform maybe being a positive thing. I fucked up sometimes. I say some things that I like, maybe because the land reform they're talking about, I was thinking like South African land reform, where like through
Guatemalan land reform. Yeah,
like where we try to take, you know, there's going to be things stolen and we kind of rejigger it to where like we give them more fair distribution to the people, to other people. Yeah. Nah, man. Chinese land reform in the 50s was just like mass killings of landlords by tenants. You know what I mean? To get that land redistribution going.
I can get behind that, especially at our old apartment. I can get behind that. If we all just descended into the square that we used to live in and we all had like a board or something.
Yeah.
It was like, please don't do this. And we were like, fuck you. Piece of shit, and then we beat them all with sticks until
Were you there? Because you're kind of accurately describing Chinese land reform.
I just, like, you know,
from the 20s until the 50s. That's actually that's like 30 years of an accurate description of how that would go.
I mean, it's an exploitive relationship. Who hasn't one been like, man, if we could just all, if we weren't so damn lumping, if we could bind together and be like, yeah, hey, man, we employ you, you know, we fuck you, we're going to. Sees his own shit, but then they have no purpose.
A lot of people are behind on their rent, and that's real, and that's a real thing. But let's be honest. Did you ever think about, instead of paying it, you could beat your landlord to death? Not that I'm advocating it. But it's an option on the table.
It's out there.
A Maoist revolution, Maoist land reform is on the table.
Against your landlord, right?
Okay. I want to live places, so I'm going to say that I don't mean that. Okay? All right. Move. And the estimated death toll from like the Chinese land reform movements ranges from like the hundreds of thousands on the low end to like, that's the low end, to the millions on the high end.
Damn.
It's a lot. It's a fucking lot.
I just think it's crazy that they had millions of landowners and landlords around. Like, if we were to do an uprising similar to that in America, it'd be like, you know, headlines would just read like, yeah, about 16 landlords died last Saturday in an uprising of the proletariat. And then it's like, oh, wow.
It's weird with, like, have you ever met somebody who's, like, super rich in Houston?
Yeah. I used to work for, I've, like, privately bartended, like, 2 gigs of, like, rich swingers. It was a weird time, man. A lot of weird rich shit going on in the foothills of the Woodland.
You know? Oh God, oh. I don't want to go to a swingers orgy where you're the bartender.
Oh, they would dismiss me before anything weird happened, really? You know. But there were yeah. But there was just a vibe where it's like 2 different couples would come in and then be like, "Oh, I'm Jim and this is my wife Jane, and I'm Hubert and this is my wife Jacqueline," and then you'd see like Jacqueline on Jim's lap and Jane on Hubert's lap, and then, you know, around 9 o'clock rolls around and they're like, okay, all right, you can leave now, we're about to get weird. And I'm like, all right, cool, whatever.
Okay, that's such bullshit, because like white people will just have no rhythm, but they be swinging, but they have time to fuck each other's wives, but they still have no rhythm. Focus on what matters, which is rhythm and seasoning your food. And that's a stereotypical joke from Joshua Brandon Stokes Esquire
over here, swinging when you should be bebopping.
Okay, wow, all right. And the only thing worse than that was the campaign to suppress revolutionaries, which followed and actually ran concurrently with the Chinese land reform movement, which the campaign to suppress counter-revolutionaries ran from 1950 to 1953. It was the first political campaign launched by the People's Republic of China designed to eradicate opposition elements, especially former Kuomintang, because some of these people didn't get the fucking message and get out of here and get to Taiwan. They were just like, yeah, we're gonna let you kind of unfucking understand. And then it was just like, so they were like, at least 2.6 million people were arrested, some 1.3 million people were in prison, 700,000 were executed. However, scholars and some researchers have given like a higher estimate to the death tolls. Mao himself claimed like a total of 700,000 people were killed in the attacks on counter-revolutionaries during
the years.
So
if you're trusting a biased source, at least 700,000.
At least 700,000. Jesus Christ. It's not going to stop.
Keeps on rolling.
It's just a lie. We're just going to keep on rolling here. Yep. So Mao played a personal role in organizing, you know, mass repressions and established a system of execution quotas, which were often exceeded. Mao also, in 1951, initiated the three anti and the /5 anti campaigns. The three anti campaign was focused on the purge of government, industrial, and party officials, while the 5 anti campaign set its sights on slightly broader, talking capitalists like elements in general. Like workers denounced their bosses, spouses turned on spouses, children informed on their parents. The victims were humiliated in sessions where a targeted person would be verbally and physically abused until they confessed to crimes. Mao insisted that minor offenders be criticized.
Just like a public roast?
Yeah, it's like a public just shitting on. It's just a fucking, like, you're a piece of shit. You're fucking capitalist dudes. You're like fucking anti-Bolshevist. You're fucking a reactionary, bro. You're not with us. And like, dude, I'm with you. It's like, well, fucking, why did you fucking, did you tell me that I came into work late? If you're with me,
you wouldn't give a shit I fucking hit traffic or something because I can't bother to wake up on time because I drink too much. Like, calm the fuck down.
I would love to denounce my boss. hey, why do you care? Why do you care, Brian? Why do you care what I do? That's because you're a capitalist fucking
stooge.
You're a
fucking stooge.
You're a stooge of a fucking man or she or a they. We were talking
or
about
woman.
This before. the they. You're a stooge of the they. So Mao insisted that even the minor offenders be criticized and reformed or sent to labor camps, while the worst among them, Mao said, should be shot. These campaigns took several hundred thousands of lives more in addition to everything. And the vast majority of those were like suicide.
Uh-huh.
which was like, it was like suicide was so common in Shanghai at the time that like people wouldn't walk on the sidewalks because they're afraid that you're gonna get smushed by fucking random people jumping off the buildings.
Damn.
like
that, like, must have happened like a couple times.
Yeah. No,
for it to have made headlines, and it was like, whoa, you got to, like, tell your children, like, no, don't walk in the street. It's like, why? Are you worried a car is going to hit me? And it's like, no, I'm worried a fucking body from above is going to hit. I should be laughing, but.
Jesus Christ. It's like, we don't want to laugh at this, but at the same time, some of it, come on, guys, death is funny sometimes. It's not.
It's not. But,
it's really not, but.
I don't want to cry. I gotta twist all this darkness somehow.
Yeah, I read books on this. Hey guys, do you want to ask me if I'm all right? Nobody's asked me if I'm all right after reading all of this shit. Yeah,
soak it all up, and then you're just like.
So the practice was especially forced by the chief security officer, the security chief, Kang Shang, and it was to drive opponents to suicide. It was repeated throughout the leadership of the People's Republic. You know what I mean? So it's like, so following the consolidation of power, Mao launched the first 5-year plan in 1953 to 1958, which aimed to end Chinese dependence on agriculture in order to become a world power. The first 5-year plan was like declared a success, which encouraged Mao to instigate the second 5-year plan. In 1958, and we're gonna get to the second five year plan. 1958, it's also known as the Great Leap Forward. We're gonna get to that in a second.
You gotta rebrand
after,
you know?
One thing.
Okay.
So there was also the 100 Flowers campaign during this time, in which Mao, like in the 50s, which Mao indicated his willingness to consider different opinions on the way China.
Sorry, are those flowers on the graves or?
No. I mean, well, at the end of it, it was because he was like, no, we're cool with different ideas, bro. Like, come on, bring us in.
We're open to new ideas. Let's just you know, spark up a doob, light a little incense, pass it around, or just free exchange of ideas, man. We're all about it.
And it was initially tolerated until, like, people started questioning his leadership. They started questioning every fucking thing.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, they was like, no. Then they stomped down on it. They crushed it.
And then those people mysteriously disappeared. And you're okay.
And Judy Chang, Jung Chang, in her book, she thinks that this was all along. It was to root out the danger thinker, to kind of bring them out into the open. In her book, The Unknown Story of Mao.
Well, we talked about it a little bit in the Khrushchev episode, to where you don't see a revolution until you start loosening restrictions, and it's almost like Mao knew this.
Yeah.
And so he started to loosen restrictions, so that way he knew who his enemies was, so that way he could just brutally suppress it before the cat had the opportunity. It's almost like he started to open the bag to allow the cat out, and then once it was out, he fucking stabbed it, you know?
Here's the thing. When I was reading the actual, I'm going to disagree with you on that, because I was reading the actual Little Red Book, and like all the, there's a lot of stuff from like directly from the 50s in here. He has two kind of great flourishes of like writing potential, and like it's
couple hot strides.
Yeah, there's a
hot
strides.
Streaks.
I'd say the 30s and late 30s, 37 around there, and then like the 50s, he's just hammering them out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, bangers.
He talks a lot about the dictatorship of democracy, a democratic dictatorship, and that people, especially the presidency, should be in the dictatorship role. Their will should be have a dictatorship like force in the country. So I think he thought like, if I'm about giving democracy, like letting people hear, and we're gonna, and then he realized, oh no, a lot of motherfuckers out there still don't fuck with me. So I gotta cleanse some of these fucking people. So then when I get the democracy, I get the kind of, you know, because like at this point, again, I go back to the Long March shit. He spent like Long March or in the revolutionary struggle. He spent 22 years in that fucking field, running around the mountains all over China. We'll call it what you want. God, well, he's a communist. I'm not gonna call it God. I call it God, the universe, providence, whatever. they think if they will it, it will happen. Mm-hmm. And that is gonna really be fucked up in The Great Leap Forward, which starts in January of 1958. Mao lost the second year, 5-year plan, also known as the Great Leap Forward, intended to turn China from an agrarian nation into an industrialized one. And it was an alternative model for economic growth to the Soviet Union, focusing on heavy industry that was advocated by others in the party. Under this economic program, the relatively small agricultural collectives that have been formed to date were rapidly merged into large people's communes, so large-scale farming. And many of these peasants were ordered to work on massive infrastructure projects. Large-scale communes, and many of these peasants were ordered to work on, like, massive infrastructure projects. Uh-huh. And on the production of iron and steel. And some private food production was banned, and livestock and farm implements were brought under the collective ownership.
Okay.
So here's the thing. You're changing the fucking way the production is happening. And that can really fuck up these things called supply chains. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, if you fuck it up, you might not be able to get food to people the traditional ways that you've gotten food to them. Because it seems like they're producing stuff in these small little collectives. That way they kept what they needed, and then they pushed the rest out. So, but if you're going to do this, now you have to get food to everybody. You have to understand what that forecast is like. I don't even know how the fuck you did that before Excel spreadsheets.
You need to be, like, consistently exceeding production. So not only the people who are now, like, forced to relocate and, like, almost incur the cost, and if not the cost, at least the trials, or incur the cost, or they have to move, basically, or something along those lines, to where they have to, like, uproot their lives and move closer to the center of this large new conglomerate, which is going to set them back because they're used to this small scale little shit.
Yeah.
And now they have to move, and then they have to, like, do exactly what they did before and then some. And it's like, you're asking a lot. You know?
You're telling them, hey, go work on this project and then do all this shit. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes we're not even going to allow you to make your own private food. We're going to get you food. And if you can do that, and you can plan it out the right way, and you can fucking make it happen, well, then we're talking about a different thing. But they couldn't. They couldn't. It looked like they had no fucking clue what they were doing. They were implementing, like, a variety of unproven and unscientific, like, agricultural techniques in the new commons. Mm. The combined effect of, like, the division of labor to steel production and infrastructure projects and natural disasters that would just come in led to, like, a 15% in a drop of grain production, and then more, a 10% in 1960, and then, like, no recovery in 1961. So people just started to starve.
Yeah, it happens.
like it was also that people, like, they, you know, they were also be like, hey, like, the cadres or the small local party people wouldn't report accurate numbers up.
Yeah.
And because, you know, maybe they're scared and they're like, fuck it, I gotta, you know, it's wrong thinking to even fucking to even report the wrong number.
If I'm reporting the wrong number, if I'm not meeting my quotas, that's wrong thinking. And also, maybe, I don't want to be killed by Mao in a fit of rage or whatever.
It's just like so you get somebody gets your numbers, like, yo, this number is reactionary.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a
that's
fucking
right. That's right.
Reactionary? So what happened is people fucking starved.
Yep.
People fucking starved. And the question with this shit is, did Mao know or did Mao not know? Some scholars are going to be like, Mao really didn't know, and fucking it was that the small cadre's lying. And then some people are going to be like, Mao knew the whole time. They all knew, all the communist people knew. I personally, from what I've read all over, I think it's both. I think it's that Mao, you know, from Philip Short's book and from unknown story, and just looking all over the internet for shit, that Mao didn't probably know at first, because he's fucking thinking it's gonna go great, and fucking whatever, dude. And but then the numbers started to come back, and like there's some evidence. He was like, yo, what the fuck is going on? Like, and then what happens is he starts to get criticized.
Yeah.
He starts to get criticized. It's like, fuck. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he's well, like,
the state's very, it's already, his hold on power, it's been like, what, 10 years? So it's a relatively mutation. His hold on power is very precarious. What are you going to do? So you start out, you're like, okay, this is going to revolutionize the shit. Mm-hmm. We're going to do really well. Then the numbers come in. You have this kind of shock. You start to get criticized. Yeah. You can't admit that you're wrong.
Yeah.
You got to kind of double down and be like, no, you guys just aren't. So it's like part guilt, part not wanting to take the blame for it of like, this is on you guys. This is not on me. My system would have worked great if you would have implemented it correctly.
And that's, and you know, and then you're going to get kind of, he has callous quotes about people starving. He's like talking about, you know, that in a secret meeting in Jinjiang Hotel in Shanghai in March 25th of 1959, he was talking about, hey, to distribute resources evenly will only ruin the Great Leap Forward. When there is not enough to eat, people starve to death. It is better to let half the people die so that the other half can eat their fill. It was kind of like this attitude, which is like, yo, man, it's that thing of like, maybe I didn't know, then I knew, and then I started getting, then I got mad about it because I was like, yo, you guys got to do better. And then I got criticized. And then really, I just don't want to lose my hold on power.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Cause,
so I have to come up with a justification for why this is happening.
So it was also like, if like, and just to kind of give you an idea of like some of like the stupid shit, like they were trying to like, you had to run like a little like kind of a steel making like facility in your back, like little like a little like scrap metal fucking steel making things in your backyard. It was like all over China. And each person was supposed to like make steel in their backyards. But guess what? Steel making is an ancient tradition that takes a lot, that's taken a societies a while to get down. And yeah, it's
takes fucking hard, man.
It takes a lot to make steel. It's take people get chemical engineering degrees to like all that shit to like all these engineering degrees to make steel. You just can't make it in your backyard. So they weren't making steel. They were making pig iron. They were making shitty iron that was not really sellable and then had to be re-refined. Some areas did it good because some areas had a natural steel making background, but other areas that didn't have that just were fucked. Like,
didn't meet the quotas.
They didn't make the quotas, and then they would have to redo the steel again. So basically, you're fucking your agriculture, your infrastructure products, projects are, you're doing all this massive shit. Some of it getting ruined by natural disasters. A lot of people are starving, and then the steel that you're also trying to make, half of the shit that you have to redo again.
Damn.
So Mao was defending himself, and he was trying to, and he was kind of pushing it off. And at a large communist party conference in Beijing in January 1962, called the 7,000 Cadres Conference, State Chairman Liu Shaoqi denounced the Great Leap Forward. And denouncing is like, this is like, yeah, that's a big fucking deal. Nobody ever fucking denounces Mao. He's Mao. You know what I mean? Sure. And he as responsible for widespread famine. The overwhelming majority of delegates expressed agreement. But Defense Minister Lin Biao, who you remember from back in the day in the Jingsheng Mountains, he's been with Mao and with the communists for fucking forever, staunchly defended Mao. And so what ensued after 1962, well, start of 1962, was a brief period of liberalization. I don't know if I'm saying that word right. Liberalization.
Yeah.
Liberalization. And while Mao and Lin, they were plotting a comeback, Liu Shaoqi and old boy Deng Xiaoping, which we talked about in the first, showed up briefly in the first episode, briefly in the second episode, they rescued the economy by disbanding the people's communes and introducing elements of private control of peasant small holdings and importing grain from Canada and Australia.
That's those private plots, man.
It's just like, you know what I mean? So they're coming in and they're playing like the hero part.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So during this period, China was continuing to claim record harvests. and was a net exporter of grain through the period. And Mao, because Mao wanted to pay back the Soviets. So how many people died during the Great Leap Forward is a point of contention. And so just the numbers, 20 million is the CCP, Chinese Communist Party statistic. That's okay. The low end. That's them saying it, them fucking selves. Yeah,
that's them copping it's to 20 million people. At least, okay.
In fucking 4 years.
Damn.
June Chung is going to say 38 million. She does some things with, like, the population growth and then the population, like, how that kind of disappears.
Yeah, and children being malnutritionized. Malnourished, rather.
People are going to say, people are going to say higher than that. Some one estimation puts it at 46 million. I've heard 52 million with the children being malnourished and having problems later and dying later from starvation. This is out of 650 million people.
Damn.
So it's like a roughly like a little less than 10%.
Yeah.
It's like just an insane amount.
Your mind just puts up mental blocks to try to like grasp a number of people just dying like that. It becomes a number as opposed to individuals because it's easier to digest.
Now I can't really wrap my mind around that. Just gonna move on to the Sino-Soviet split. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. So. One of the most important events of the Cold War was the Sino-Soviet split, and it's where China splits from Russia or the Soviet Union, and they kind of become competing communist regimes or competing communist kind of orbits. So Stalin had established himself as the correct like successor of the Marxist thought, and then he died, and it was Mao versus Khrushchev. And saying who was now going to be the leader and of kind of Marxist ideal, and Mao thought that he was the successor. A little of that might just been like Mao just being like I'm the person who was in the fields, while Khrushchev was like a moderate, and maybe a little bit more of a liberal guy. You know what I mean? And I think it also had to do with like the patron client relationship that like China and the Soviet Union had, and maybe that they like China was trying to get out of that yoke and become its own fucking you know what
trying
I mean?
Trying to assert itself.
Yeah. So they split, and that kind of have ramifications for Vietnam. That has ramifications for Laos.
Fucking like everywhere. Yeah. Because now you've got an option. To where it's like, okay, we're communist, or at least we're anti-U.S. Should we go to China for aid, or should we go to the Soviet Union for aid? And it does a lot, I think, to like legitimize China in the eyes of the third world. Yeah. To where it's like, okay, it's not two powers. It's not U.S. or USSR. It's U.S., USSR, or China.
Because
so you've got more options.
Because China saw itself as the leader of that third world, the leader of the colonialized world, getting out from under that yoke and becoming its own fucking thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but so did Khrushchev. But I can almost see Mao, from what I've heard you tell me about him, I can see Mao doing it as like a power play be like, no, I'm going to be undisputed leader of the communist world. They're all going to come to me. I am the father of this.
Here's the thing. When you go back and when you go back to that first episode that you should watch, if you haven't listened, the period he grows up in is that period of late 1800s and early 1900s China. So that's the period with that China had became picked off by colonial powers and warlords, and there was no whole China. China needed to be resurrected. This is the Middle Kingdom. This is fucking China. China is like, as whatever you think of the world, it is like, when you talk about fucking Persia, you talk about Egypt, you talk about Rome, you need to talk about China also.
Yeah.
This is so I think that ideal is still there. So they're like, I'm not a client state to anybody.
Yeah, fuck no.
We're China. The Middle Kingdom, dude.
Yeah.
like this is, yo, fucking, we invented fireworks and gunpowder. We're out here. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
So kind of moving past that, the next period we get to is the great the Cultural Revolution, and this is where Mao believes a revolution in culture would unseat and unsettle the ruling class and keep China in a perpetual state of revolution. Some people think that the kind of the impetus for this was that, you know, state chairman, you know, or president Liu Shaoqi and general secretary Deng Xiaoping were attempting to marginalize Mao and take control of the economic policy, asserting themselves as politically as well. And many claim that Mao was responding to their movements by launching this cultural revolution. And his kind of tool in the Great Leap Forward was this group of young people called the Red Guards. And the Red Guards were college age kids, adolescents, and it was a mad student led paramilitary social movement that was mobilized and guided by Chairman Mao through 1966 through 1967.
That is weird. Well, I mean, we'll get to it in the next episode, but yeah. Just look at the student movements and just kind of how you can use the student movements to where they're like, they're dumb, they're young, and they're fiery, and they'll do whatever a strong man says.
If you don't know who the Red Guard is, they're the guys with like the little red book that you'll see. Like if you actually look up the Red Guard and kind of getting more into like the tactics of the Red Guard. First they were met with like resistance because people were like, well, what the fuck is this? But then they received their personal support from Mao, and the movement like rapidly grew. And Mao made use of the group as propaganda and to accomplish such goals as destroying symbols of China's pre-communist past, including ancient artifacts and grave sites of notable Chinese figures. This is why when you go to China, you can't find a lot of shit. Like there's some stuff that's there. That's there, but like it used to be a lot more.
Yeah.
And they destroyed a shit ton of it during the Cultural Revolution. You know what I mean? And so, and like, just for instance, Deng Xiaoping and his family were targeted by the Red Guards, who imprisoned Deng's eldest son, Deng Pufeng. And Deng Pufeng was tortured and jumped out of a window, and I'm putting quotes around that. Jumped out of a window. Some people say he was thrown out of a window of a four-story building in 1968, becoming paraplegic. Like it's that type of shit. And they're harassing.
Did they want him to die and just not go up high enough, or
they killed people. They kind of like the Chinese government let them like tacit consent,
because
they couldn't really control it. Like it was like.
Yeah.
Because I'd be like in Beijing, August and a September of either 67 or 68, like 1,700 people were killed. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's not like the massive numbers we just saw.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just going around terrorizing people, and they're having like, you know, women who have too long of hair, they're cutting their hair. You know, this is where you're like fucking your teacher, the students will tell your teacher they're fucking wrong and you're fucking reactionary, and they'll fucking put you in a closet and shit. This is also why if you read the book, The Unknown Story of The Unknown Story Mao by Jun Chang, this is why she hates Mao so much, because she was part of the Red Guard and she persecuted her own parents.
Yeah.
Like, so there's something personal in it for her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So Deng Xiaoping, you know, his son became a paraplegic, and Deng was sent to like work in the Xinjiang County tractor factory in rural Jiangxi province, to work as a regular worker. In 4 years, Deng spent his time writing, and he also spent time like caring for his son, like having to turn him over because he's paraplegic, to like not get bed sores and stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Damn. Yeah, that's a lot.
So Mao was like informed of like the people who had died and like the losses, particularly people who had been driven to suicide. He's alleged to have commented, "People who try to commit suicide don't attempt to save them. China is such a populous nation; it is not as if we cannot do without a few people." He's a dick. He's the worst.
That's pretty heartless. Yeah. Just be like,
he's the worst.
might as well just have him in quotes saying, fuck him.
Like, yeah, fuck like, him, man. Right. So, was it that the Red Guard was controlled by the Chinese government? I think they were controlled more by the Chinese, by Mao's
side. It would be
side.
Embarrassing if they weren't. You know what I mean? If the Chinese government would just let this band of young kids run
saying.
Wild and kill all these people.
It wasn't.
They're definitely under control.
That's what I'm saying. It was more under Mao's control, but it wasn't under the broad control of the Chinese government. They just weren't. They were like kind of getting their tacit consent. What if Mao just has these roaming group of kids that are basically under his control?
Yeah.
You're going to tell them to stop?
You're going to say, like, Mao, I object, and then they're going to show up at your doorstep and take you and accuse you of being a reactionary and counter-revolutionary and throw you out of a fucking window. Like, no, you have to give your passive assent.
You know what I mean? So it's estimated that hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps sometimes some people say millions, you know, a lot of suicides perished in the violence of the Cultural Revolution. This included prominent figures such as Liu Shaoqi, who was the president of China, who died from harsh treatment and torture.
Jesus.
It's revenge. He was like, yo, you fucking gonna try to take me out, bro? I'm fucking gonna fucking send fucking
You're gonna blow
17
the whistle
years after.
On this one? Fuck that. No, you're dead.
I'm gonna send TikTokers after you. I'm gonna send 17-year-olds with nothing better to do to fucking fuck you up, dude.
Yep.
Like, so it was during this period also that Mao chose Lin Bao, who like basically was like Mao's yes man to be a successor. But by 1971 there was a divide between the two men that had become apparent. In official like history in China states that Lin Bao was planning a military coup, an assassination attempt on Mao. And Lin Bao died in September 13th of 1971, a plane crash over airspace in Mongolia as he was presumably fleeing China, anticipating his arrest probably. The CPC has declared that Lin Bao that was like posthumously was expelled from the party. That was at the time like Mao lost trust. Once Lin Bao fucked him over, he lost trust in everybody. And people also say that people say that Lin Bao coup attempt was aided by the KGB or being organized by the KGB. Maybe that's that Sino-Soviet split coming back to rub its hands.
Now that Brezhnev is in power, it kind of makes sense that he would have a slightly different approach, but also that just could be the Chinese using Russia as a boogeyman to further justify the death of Lin Bao over some personal shit.
I mean, I think there's some research on it. I just couldn't dig further and deeper because we still have a good amount to fucking go. So in 1969, Mao like declared the Cultural Revolution to be over. Although various historians in and outside of China marked the end of the Cultural Revolution as a whole, or in part, in 1976 following Mao's death. And the arrest of the Gang of Four, which included Madame Mao. And Madame Mao has her own story with her own terrors. And and a lot of it is just too much to cover in this fucking episode. Maybe we'll come back around to Madame Mao. Look, Mao also fucked Madame Mao over. He cheated on her all the time. Basically in front of her he would have people that worked for him, secretaries, and he would be fucking all the secretaries. It was a lot. And I think there was also a part where Mao lost physical attraction to Madame Mao because, you know, she was this actress, and then when you see Madame Mao in the 60s, she is a lady who looks like she has a mean pot roast, but you don't think anything sexual about her. So kind of moving that. And also, Mal's just a douche. He's just a fucking dick, and he's fucking going to fuck whoever, and he's not going to care, especially not now. Like, before, he was, like, a communist guy on the run, you know, fucking doing his own little fucking
renegade,
thing.
Badass, rebel dude, and then all of a sudden, it's like, now you're on top. You've lost your spark. You've lost your spine.
I've probably low ball killed 20 million people in 4 years. I'm just gonna come in whoever I want to come in. That's just.
I am surprised I am still alive. Yeah. Like, why has nobody shot me yet?
Exactly. Like, this is just like, it's like, this is, if you've killed.
This is on you guys. This is on you.
20, if you kill 20 million people, you'd be like, look, I'm just glad I'm alive. Like, it's crazy. There hasn't been like a bunch of fucking attempts on my life. I'm just gonna have sex with whoever. My wife. Tell my wife. Fuck it. You know what I mean? That's just
fuck
the whole thing.
Yeah. Like, Fidel did the same shit, so maybe there's something to like assassination attempts making you
ultimate power, man. Ultimate power.
Yep. Yeah.
So the Cultural Revolution is like now in China officially regarded as like a severe setback. It's looked at like in scholarly circles, it's looked at as a disruptive period for China, where like 1/10 of Chinese people, estimated 100 million, like suffered during the pyramid during the period. But there are other scholars who argue that this was like actually a decent time for China, in that like the grain was growing, the grain production was bouncing back. Like, they were, you know, people were living better, healthcare was free, the first nuclear bomb was the first H bomb was detonated. They launched a satellite. They commissioned nuclear submarines, and they had various advances in science and technology. So saying that, like, even though like the society was fucking crazy, there was like, you know what I mean, there was like legit things happening.
They're still progressing. Yeah. As fucked up as it is, huh?
I mean, so
that's a thorny one.
So just to reiterate, you know, the estimated death tolls from 400,000. Which is a widely accepted minimal figure. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could say, and then also it's going to go all the way up to like 1.5 million. It's like a high figure as for people who were killed, including all of rural China. I think that, you know what I mean? And then again, Jun Chang, unknown story. Of Mao, the unknown story, you'll say as many as 3 million people. So numbers are all over. 400,000 is the widely accepted
low ball.
Like, okay. Which is a lot for a low ball.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Still too many.
So Mao is kind of living out his end years, and, you know, it becomes a state secret that he's like suffered multiple lung and heart ailments during his later years. And there are confirmed reports that he had Parkinson. There are unconfirmed reports that he had possibly had Parkinson's disease, and he might have had something. He might have had Lou Gehrig's disease. Unconfirmed still, though.
That's not Lou Gehrig's disease. That's Mao Zedong's disease. That's his disease. You know?
Today, no, that's the luckiest man in the world disease. You know, today, mm-hmm. I am the luckiest man in the world. You seen that speech, the Lou Gehrig speech?
I think
that's his speech. I think hopefully nobody's like, yo, you fucked up that speech. So Mao suffered two major heart attacks in 1976, one in March and then another in July, and before a third struck on September 5th, rendering him an invalid. And Mao Zedong passed at basically 12:10 a.m. on September 9th, 1976, at age 82. And just a little, just which is, you know, fucked up. You know, but you know, he dies. I don't know if you can say it's really fucked up. You know what? He dies. A life that transformed the world, to say the least.
Uh-huh.
One of the biggest leaders of the 20th century. Well, of course, we didn't mention the Nixon meeting I don't have time for that. It's just too much. Nixon, the U.S. and China get back together despite to say fuck you to the Soviet
triangle diplomacy.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean?
Fuck you. We're not meeting with Brezhnev.
Yeah,
they did later, but only after they met with Mao. They were using it as like bait, basically. Yeah.
Fuck you, Soviet Union. That's basically you, Soviet the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Richard Nixon.
So that's the only voice he's good at. It's actually phenomenal. So. The question comes, and, you know, with Mao, with 40 million people to 80 million people, to as many as 80 million people.
Is that combined?
No. That's
across all this shit?
Oh, across all this shit. Across all this shit, probably across his rule, not across... During like this, all the fuck shit, like the 22 years of revolution before that, which there were like, which were there
excluding,
You know what I mean? Under his regime range, I'm pretty sure we're saying 40 to 80 from
this episode. We're saying 40 to 80
from 49 to 76. People want to compare him to Hitler or Stalin. That's the comparison that is made, and a lot of that kind of hinges on the fact, did he know that he was not, he didn't mean to kill all those people. That is what hinges on. That's like what people say, oh, he's not like Hitler or Stalin because he didn't mean to kill all those people. And then there are other people like, he is like that because he had to have meant to kill all those people. Even if he didn't do that, even if he didn't mean to, he's like that because, you know what I mean? So, I argue he probably knew. He's not an idiot. Like, he had an idea of what was going on. He's not a fucking maniac, you know what I mean? Well, he is a maniac. I think a lot of it has to do with the Long March and just that creation of like, yeah, man, we did it. If we just could persevere, we can do anything. No matter how many people died, the Long March. Yeah, I guess it's a success. But you lost 90% of your men.
Yeah.
For like, you know what I mean? Like, okay.
I don't know. I don't, because it's like, how do you crack that skull to where he wasn't, as far as I know, he wasn't explicitly racist in that, like. Hitler makes the headlines because he targeted people by ethnicity. Mao didn't do that.
Yeah.
So at the very least, or at least as far as I know, he didn't do that. At the very least, we can say he wasn't a bigot, right? So which is why he kind of escapes the Hitler comparison, because it's like he didn't discriminate on who we killed. He just killed whoever was against him, you know?
So yeah. So Mao definitely. I mean, there's some funny business, definitely, from what I know of and I've read about at the beginning of, like, in the revolutionary days, with a little bit of genocide of some Uyghurs,
Oh, yeah.
I think there's something to do with he didn't target ethnicity
at all, but saying Hitler's more known.
But they were against him. They were just against him. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and you know, then you have the quotes like Mao saying, working like this with all these projects, half of China may well have to die, if not half, one third or one tenth, 50 million die. But then he would follow it up with saying, if with a death toll of 50 million, you didn't lose your jobs, I at least should lose mine. Whether I should lose my head would also be in question. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Are you gonna say as bad as Hitler and Stalin? Stalin, I think, is a more apt comparison.
Yeah.
Than Hitler, because Hitler is like a systemic.
There's the ethnic. Strong ethnic component with Hitler, but with Stalin, it's just like he was just trying to build communism, but it's also like he was still I don't want to call him bloodthirsty, but it's like
he was still crazy. He's crazy.
Yeah,
fucking crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, because it's an interesting mind to try to dissect of like, okay, well, did you think that it really comes down to, do you believe that the ends justify the means? To where Mao maybe thought like, okay, if 50 million people die, but we build a communist utopia that infects the world, and all of a sudden, like, everyone's just living in fucking self-sufficient paradise, and nobody's got needs anymore, and we've built this from the ground up.
And we've 50 million. We freed the third world from the yoke of colonialism.
And the American empire has been toppled. Yeah. But the whole world is happier and better for it. But 50 million people, if that's like the goal that he thought he was working toward, and he's like, no, ends totally justify the means.
And it's interesting what you said before, which was, hey, the ends justifying the means. Because one of the more interesting comparisons that people usually do, was he as bad as Hitler or was he as bad as Stalin? But the interesting comparison from Professor Wasserstrom, University of California of Irvine, compares kind of Mao's relationship with China with Andrew Jackson's relationship with the United States. And that really, if you want to talk about it, the Trail of Tears is just a land reform.
Yeah.
The whole Western expansion and the genocide.
If anything, it's
Native
land
America.
Redistribution.
It's redistribution. You know? Like, so. Yeah. Is Andrew
but
Jackson
that,
as bad as Mao?
There's not,
that,
not
on the scale.
The
scale.
Numbers.
The numbers are
insane. Yeah, to scale. He could be a minor Mao.
Yeah.
But he's also got the ethnic component to it that's reinserted. Mm-hmm.
Is
to
he
where
worse than Mao? Because you could say.
Depends on how you look at it.
Because then you could say, okay, Andrew Jackson, pro slavery.
Yeah.
Pro, you know, kind of genocidal against Native Americans.
Uh huh.
Great military hero, like Mao.
Yeah. Crazy fucker. Lots of crazy, wild stories about him pointing cannons at his own armies.
Mm-hmm.
And shit like that, that, you know,
and
Wars folks love to talk about. Just, oh, whatever.
All doing that to basically just provide basically a life for, like, white men.
For his country.
Which is white men.
All in the name of furthering the American dream.
Yeah.
The ends
justify
the means.
That's
like,
very, yeah. It's,
I don't know, man.
I mean,
I can't.
That's,
I can't say.
And wouldn't that go for, like, all presidents who kind of preside over the manifest destiny and Western expansion? Because that's just land
reform. Redistribution.
Yeah.
But it favors the 1%, ironically.
Yeah.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say the ends don't justify.
No, they don't. They don't.
Means.
You shouldn't kill
I'm gonna
people.
I'm going to say you can't think that they will.
You shouldn't
can't,
kill
you can't make that sacrifice. You can't be the one to decide.
Okay, so I like kind of Wasserstrom's point as being like, I think Mao is comparable to Stalin, and I think he's comparable to Hitler without the ethnic, you know, just for death, pure death creation. And I think I like thinking of Mao in terms of him being the Andrew Jackson of China. In terms of, even in China, Deng Xiaoping says after Mao did 70% of things right, 30% of things wrong. They have Mao on some of their money.
Yeah.
If they look back on some of the things he did and go like, that was wrong, but they understand that
if he hadn't have done it, they wouldn't be where they are now.
He was the guy who led the revolution to modern day China.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He laid a lot of groundwork in destroying the country and just fucking it up to what maybe. I'm interested in reading about Deng Xiaoping. And that's how we're going to end today, which is with the kind of the end story of Deng Xiaoping. Which is the guy who was cast off to that farm to care for his bedridden son, who was now paraplegic after being thrown out a window by Mao's Red Guard. Jesus Christ.
Yep.
So Deng Xiaoping, after all of that, ends up being third in line after Chou En-lai appoints him. And then he ends up, after Mao dies and after defeating the Gang of Four, becomes the chairman of China, becomes the leader of China. And Deng Xiaoping is the person that actually creates the China that you know of today. It's like puts in the one child policy, does all that stuff. A lot of the economic industrialization was like he pushed it and made it a lot of things, opened the country up for a lot of investment and did a lot of shit like that. Is he the hero of our story? Until 1989, maybe. Until a little place called Tiananmen Square, he might be the hero. And then he stops being the hero. But Jesus,
he's also definitely like standing on Mao's shoulders.
Oh, for sure.
All the reforms and stuff is. Yeah. You can almost say that like Mao did the dirty work.
He did
and
the dirty
Deng
work.
Deng was like, "All right, I renounce all this." But he's almost comparable to Khrushchev in that way, that like Stalin gets his hands dirty, Mao gets his hands dirty and like builds up the communist state, and then their successor is the one who gets to stand up and say, yeah, all that shit was fucked up, let's see if we can actually make this communist experiment work within the confines of reality.
And
Deng Xiaoping was undoubtedly like more successful, and you know, there's a whole backstory as to like why and stuff. But
and is China a communist government? Because the more I looked at that, I would say they're mixed,
hybrid.
They're a hybrid mixed government. They're a technocracy.
Yeah.
It's just people. They just put people in positions that can do the job. And that's it. They're just technical
people. I mean, it's something's working for them, you know.
You can't watch porn over there. So fuck that. Okay, all right, guys. Okay, that's how I'm gonna end this one. So thank you guys for listening to all three parts of Mao. It's been a journey. I think we grew together. I think we both became men together. I think I love you. Okay.
Are you talking to me or the audience?
Talking to one special person out there. That's you, Henry.
Thanks, man. I love you too, man.
I don't love you. I take that back. Okay.
I don't believe you, though.
Okay. Hey, guys. All right. If you not follow us, if you don't follow us already, follow us at Hard Fried History on Facebook and Instagram and HFH Podcast on Twitter. Henry, what's your social media?
You can find me at Henry E. Price on Instagram and Henry Price on Facebook.
Okay. That's good. That's good stuff. You can find me at Joshua B. Stokes Instagram and Joshua B. Stokes on Twitter, and Joshua Stokes on Facebook. You just want to holler at me. And what were you gonna say, Henry?
Next week.
Ooh.
Episode
okay.
We got next week. We got a hot one for you next week. I think it's a hot one. We are going to be talking about Indonesia and the genocide you've probably never heard of.
So, new genocide,
yay! Woo-hoo! Yeah. All about it. Mass death. Christ. I'm so sad.
It's 40 to 80 million, one episode. It's big dog stuff. It's big dog stuff that we just, oh, there's so many bodies.
Yep.
All right. That was Mal, guys. Thank you, guys.
Go get a drink.
drink a shot or something. I know I'm going to. Thank you guys for listening. Please come back. Indonesia next week, it's gonna be fucking awesome. I learned about that a month ago, and it's fucking nice. Fuck. It's not nice. It's fucked, but it's interesting. Thank you guys for listening. Please like, please subscribe, please share, and we'll see you guys next time.